In the United States alone, 74 million dogs are owned by crazy people like myself and Louise Bernicau, who's my guest today. She's a writer and author of Bark If You Love Me, and more recently, Dreaming in Libro, How a Good Dog Tamed a Bad Woman. 74 million dogs are a lot of dogs, Louise.
And I wonder what percentage of those are owned by women.
It would be very interesting to know that.
Nobody's ever done that, but part of what forced me to write both of these books is that all the things that I saw about people and dogs, I mean, now it's changed, but maybe this is a little subset of chick lit. I'd hate to say that, but I would. Marley, you know, which was on the bestseller list forever, is a story, as so many of those books are, about families, right? The old-fashioned mom, dad, Dick, Jane, Spot thing. And my experience was so different from what I read, not only because the dog was very different and unique, and because I was not a kid, I'm still not a kid, when he followed me home from a park, so I had a sort of grown-up experience of having my life turned inside out by an animal, but also because I'm a, quote, single woman.
And let me add, you live in Manhattan. Very different.
I live in the city, right. And contrary to all the stereotypes, I have a garden in the city, in the heart of Manhattan, and I had an animal, so one of my favorite parts of Dreaming in Libro is a whole section about taking care of the livestock and the agriculture.
So to speak.
So to speak, in my Manhattan apartment.
Did Libro destroy the garden or enjoy the garden?
Oh, no. Well, he was a little nervous about the garden because it's the fifth floor of a brownstone. It's a deck, really, on which I've built a garden. No, he was a very good dog, as I said. He was good, I was bad.
Okay.
No, he didn't destroy the garden. He didn't harm the garden at all. And one of the poignant moments in my book, I don't want to give too much of it away, is what happened on 9/11, because this garden faces south in Manhattan, which means we could not only see the smoke from the World Trade Towers, but smell it. And since you know that dogs smell so many zillion times more intensely than we do, Libro and all the dogs in my neighborhood really reacted on that day. And he sat out there in the garden barking angrily at the sky.
Understandably.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what we were all doing in our own way, I suppose.
But
right?
They do it for us sort of writ large, don't they?
Yes, they do.
There was almost no emotion that Libro showed that I didn't say, oh, I know exactly how you feel.
There is a national obsession in this country, I think now more than ever, with our pets and dogs in particular. We spend nearly $40 billion a year on our pets. What is this about? Why do you think things have become so amped up in recent years?
Because the world has gotten so cruel. I'm convinced of it. One of the things that I wrote when I was trying to figure out what is this for me, this extraordinary experience of being introduced to a whole dimension of life I never saw before, which is why I wanted to write about it, I think it's my own tenderness that came out living with him, much more than it had been living with people, I must say. And looking at the state of the world and the cruelty and the harshness of our lives at the moment, I think these animals are our escape and our way to hold on to our own humanity, oddly enough.
Well, the need to...
Do you agree?
Yes, I think the need to nurture and the need also for some simplicity. Dogs are pretty simple. Love me, feed me, take me for a walk.
Right, and companionship.
Absolutely, and I'll love you forever. And the mere sight of you makes my day.
I know. No matter what kind of bad hair day you're having, no matter, you know.
Right, people regularly say to me...
All the things that we fuss about in terms of whether people will like us, you know, if we say nasty things, or we don't look quite right, or we have a zit. Dogs don't care.
Well, no, it's unconditional love at all times. And when people say to me, you know, that, for instance, I'm in that empty nest stage of life. Raised the kids, they're grown and gone, and people say, oh, why do you want a dog too? Don't you want to just be free, be able to travel, not have to be responsible for another being? And to me, I can't imagine living without a dog.
Well, I can take that a step further and tell you honestly, from the bottom of my heart, I felt freer living with Libro than I did living without anybody that I was responsible for.
In what way?
I felt freer. Well, number one, I felt safe everywhere. And as a woman living alone in Manhattan, that was a big issue, you know. And suddenly I could go anywhere in the city, any time of the day or night, and not be afraid for my safety.
Libro, by the way, was a boxer.
He was a boxer, so he was my bodyguard. I mean, I had an automatic bodyguard, and I couldn't get over that, you know. I was in parks at midnight, and I never would have done that without a dog, so I felt free that way. And then in a sort of fancy, almost, yes, not almost, in a fancy feminist way, I felt freer to decide if I wanted a man in my life, because I wasn't driven by emptiness, loneliness, yearning, including the physical stuff, you know, that I think the physical contact with animals, the affection, I mean, he was a slobbery, face-kissing dog.
Yeah, I don't know whether to pursue this line of questioning here, you know, not sure how physical you guys got with
no,
one another.
No, I didn't have sex, you know, but whenever I said how much I loved hugging him and kissing him, people would raise their eyebrows and get suspicious. I'm not talking about that. And if you live with an animal, you know what I'm talking about.
Of course. I'm teasing you.
All the cuddling and all the kissing. And he was a big smoocher. I know a lot of dogs aren't. And other friends would look at me and go, ugh, how can you stand that? And I said, well, I think it's probably a good facial treatment.
You know, it's like anything else, though. My dog's breath can be lousy to someone, but to me it's just fine.
Yeah, but that physical intimacy is something that people who live alone really suffer from the lack of. And once I had that, it made me, still on the theme of freedom here, it just made me feel freer to decide who I wanted to hang out with and how intimate I wanted to be with. You know, it gave me more choices in my life because some basic need was satisfied.
Louise, do you think there's a difference between dog people and cat people?
Sure, dogs go outside. I mean, let's start with that. My greatest thrills were all the adventures we had. And in Dreaming in Libro, I tell the story of going on a book tour with him. I mean, I guess you could take a cat on a book tour, but it wouldn't be the same thing. You wouldn't get to see the animal walk down an unfamiliar street, for example, in San Francisco, where we went on our book tour.
A very dog-friendly town, but let me say this. You don't take a cat anywhere. They take you.
That's right. But I took Libro, and he walked around the streets of San Francisco, and he would look at me like, is it okay to pee on this corner? Because it was a street. You know, everything became an adventure in the world that would never happen with a cat.
And actually, we should mention how things have really changed, that you can travel with a dog. Hotels accept dogs now.
Right, dog-friendly. Well, two of my favorite parts of Dreaming in Libro are, number one, the book tour, because we went everywhere. We did events in places like Doris Day's Dog Friendly Hotel in Carmel, you know. So you get to see, really, how dog-friendly the world has become. And the other part is that I took Libro to the beach in the fancy Hamptons for a month. And, everything I thought he would love, he hated. So that's another adventure in the world that was opened up to me because I had a dog.
What do you mean he hated things? He hated the beach? He hated the water?
He hated the beach. He hated the water. He's a boxer, so he was chest heavy and not very much of a water dog. And when it's really a funny thing. I still think, and I wrote this now more than a year ago, every time he didn't want to swim, and he once went in the water and he sunk chest first, and that was the end of that for him. So that when I tried to go swimming, he barked and barked and barked, and I could tell that he was looking at me thinking I was in trouble, and I kept, you'll see, you read it and you'll see, I kept coming out of the water and waving my arms in a swimming motion to convince him that I could make those movements and I was still safe. And he ran up and down the beach trying to get help every time I went swimming. That's one of the things he did at the beach.
Louise, you subtitled Dreaming in Libro, How a Good Dog Tamed a Bad Woman.
Uh-huh.
What's the bad woman part?
Well, you know, all this literature is about how we've domesticated the animals, but mine is a story about how the animal domesticated me. Before Libro followed me home and became part of my life, I didn't choose him, he chose me. I was not a very loving, steady, and certainly not domestic woman. And all of a sudden, I'm rushing home at 5 o'clock so that I can feed the dog at the time that he wants, you know, not only the nurture you were talking about, the desire to take care of him, which I got back from him in spades, and also things like, an orderly, regular life. That dog imposed order on my chaotic life. He had a schedule, you know, and we lived by his schedule, and it was better than my chaos.
So Libro has now gone to the next world, right?
Doggy heaven.
Doggy heaven, or as my son told me when I let him know that we were bidding Farfel adieu, he said, well, you know all dogs go to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And that is so true. But what now? You're living without a dog.
Well, I got a second dog after about a year. I mean, it was very traumatic to lose him, as you can imagine, and especially since he was my first dog, you know, and I'd never been through it before, and I didn't know how it was going to be, and he died in a very dramatic way, which I won't give away. So it took me a long time, and then I got another dog. I'm really an advocate of animal rescue, so Libro rescued me, but he was an abandoned dog. So I went to a rescue place, and I got a really beautiful brown and white creature who was 3 months old, and he's a Mastiff Amstaff, beautiful boy, and he kept growing, and he kept growing.
Mastiffs do that.
Well, I didn't listen. Also, because I'm a very literary person, and I know, and there's a whole section in my book about other women writers and their dogs, I know that Emily Bronte had a Mastiff, so I thought that was a good idea, and I forgot that I didn't live on the Yorkshire moors. You know, I live in New York City. So he got way too big for this life, and he really hated living here in the city with me, and he found himself a saint who lives on a mountaintop in West Virginia with a golden retriever and two very strong teenage football-playing sons. And that's where he went. And I'm
that
going
sounds
next,
about right.
I'm going next week to visit him because it's all so unconventional. You know, I think everything about my story is not, as we said at the beginning, Mom, Dad, Dick, Jane, Spot. Because now I have a co-mom. We think of each other as co-moms. And we send each other, you know, pictures and stories. His name is Lapis, which means pencil in Spanish. And he's still my dog. He's just not living here.
Thank you so much for these stories. Those of us who love dogs and inhale them in every possible way really enjoy reading good stories and good literature about dogs. So we thank you. I'm Joanne Green. Lots more to come on Good Dog Podcast. And we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to see your photos, great photos of your pups that we can post on Pooch Pics. Send pictures or emails to gooddog@smarterpodcasts.com.